And you're very welcome back to Lifeline. Now, I should be joined on the line by Joey O'Neill. Good morning to you, Joey.
Morning, Debbie. How are you?
Not too bad. And thanks a million for joining us this morning here on Near FM, Joey. As I mentioned earlier on, for the past couple of weeks, we've been doing interviews with people who have been addicted to either drugs, alcohol, even gambling, and they spoke how they've turned their life around. And on today's show, Joey's going to talk to us a little bit about himself. So, Joey, tell us all about how what you were addicted to and how you turned your life around.
Yeah, well, Debbie, my addiction, my biggest problem was cocaine. I was an absolute chronic cocaine addict. It took me to some very bad places. People always assume that cocaine was a clean drug, and cocaine was a social drug, acceptable drug. As far as I can see, you just see the surface now, people that are presenting themselves with cocaine addictions or cocaine problems, and it's a horrible, horrible drug to be addicted to. Of course, I started out at first, you're out in the pub with your mates and having a bit of crack or a bit of coke, and it's no harm. Then, of course, it's short in the week. And a lot of people have been addicted to coke will tell you, the paranoia that comes with it. I went through a phase, shortly before, what happened to me a few years ago is I ended up going to prison, I got locked up. But shortly before, for about a 6-month period before I got locked up, I was going through the guts of an ounce of cocaine a day, which is over €1,000 worth of money of cocaine a day. I was going through.
And where were you getting the money for this, Joe? I mean, I know they're saying it's kind of the yuppies' addiction was cocaine. I don't know whether it's as much. I know the Celtic Tiger, that was a big thing then. So how were you kind of, I suppose, keeping your habit on that much money?
I wasn't paying for it. I was involved in it, you know that way.
All right.
The fact that I was around me all the time, which is that's what led me to prison, was my drug addiction, getting caught with drugs. But like I said, if I wouldn't have been able to afford it if it wasn't all around me. And I think because I was involved in that sphere, and around them type of people, that's how my addiction became so bad, you know that way. It was just it was a horrible, horrible feeling. 7 nights a week, sitting up till all hours of the morning, paranoid out of bed. They call it a social drug. When you're that wrapped up in your addiction and you're peeping out your curtains of your sitting room window at 8 o'clock in the morning, and every car going past, paranoid out of your head. What's sociable about that? What's enjoyable about that?
And Joey, I know you're saying you were addicted to cocaine. Did this start at a young age? Had you tried anything else beforehand, get into this?
Years ago, I used to love me doing ecstasy tablets and stuff like that. I was never into hash or weed or anything like that. I never tried heroin. I never tried anything. I used to love the E scene years ago. I used to love going out to raves and stuff like that. And it stemmed from that. I know a lot of people have addictions. Will try so many different types of drugs. If you're downers and you're uppers, you're stimulants and that. Ecstasy was a stimulant, and cocaine was a stimulant. So the thing was with ecstasy years ago is that you wouldn't be doing ecstasy 7 nights a week. Do you know that way?
You'd
do it at the weekend and you'd have a good night and then that's it, you'd be grand. And any time I'd done ecstasy, I was never not able to function during the week. I was never felt like that I was addicted to ecstasy. I used to love my Saturday nights out, do a couple of E and that was it. But once the cocaine started taking over, for a good 15 years, I'd say, without actually realising that I was addicted to cocaine, I could see it slowly creeping in. I'd be doing a Friday night, Saturday night, then it'd be a Sunday night, and then it'd be a Tuesday night during the week, slowly over time. And then when I started getting involved in what I was doing, which sort of gave me free access to the cocaine, it was, do you know what I mean? It was carnage after that, I was.
Now, what happened to make you turn your life around? Did you have a bad experience? Or I know you said you ended up in prison because of your addiction to cocaine. Was it when you were in prison that you decided this was it, you had to get your life on track?
Yeah, well, it was, without a doubt, it was a turning point. For a long time before that, I knew, I never liked doing cocaine. The last 5-6 years, I never liked doing cocaine. I hated it, to be honest with you. It was an addiction. I was wrapped up in it. I couldn't see any way out of it. I used to sob myself to crying some nights and stuff like that. It's a long, long time since I've done cocaine and actually enjoyed it. It was a habit that I hate. But I was going to court, I was going to addiction counsellors. I was doing group work. I was doing therapy work. I went through the whole 12 steps program with AA. I'd done all that, and none of that was working for me. So deep down all along, I knew that the only way for me to beat my addiction, to get better, would have been residential treatment. I'd asked a few questions. I'd tried to find out if that was plausible for me. But deep down all along, I knew that was the only thing that would work for me, but I really didn't want to go into residential treatment. I thought it was too much of a big step in that, you know what I mean? It's a lot of commitment to do something like that. But I ended up, I got caught with some drugs. I ended up going to prison. And to be honest with you, even tonight that I got caught, I've said this many times before, I've no problem admitting it. I felt such a relief tonight I got caught. I felt it because I knew I was going to prison. And for me, anyone else, in my situation would have been bricking it, they would have. I just felt a weight on my shoulders, I felt the relief. I said, lovely, I'm going to prison now. This is a chance for me now to sort my life out. I was looking at serious charges. I was looking at a big prison sentence, and I wasn't worried about any of that. I was getting away from the access that I had to cocaine. And for me, even when I went into Clover Hill, I was committed to Clover Hill. Mm-hmm. And from the first day I got in there, I linked him with a brilliant drug counsellor straight away. He had played a big part in turning my life around. He's involved with Merton's Quay. But I knew as well, a lot of this was on me. This was up to me now. This is a chance for me to turn my life around. There's a chance for me now to make this change. That, to me, this is residential treatment. Listen, prison is not a nice place. Nobody will tell it. Prison is not a nice place. It's a horrible place. But the prison side of it never bothered me. What killed me was being away from my family, my wife, my kids, and my friends. That's what really hurt me. But I actually, believe it or not, I actually thrived in prison. Because there's a lot of services, people don't realise this, there's an awful lot of services in prison that you can use, that you can utilise. If you want to change, and if you want to make that difference, if you want to turn your life around. I became an Irish Red Cross volunteer in the prisons, which had a huge impact on me. I've been still active, an active volunteer now since I'm out of prison. I actively go back into prisons every few months. I facilitate this course called Overdose Prevention and Harm Reduction. I do a Culture of Nonviolence course, and these are all brilliant for my own recovery. Knowing that my experiences, the things that I have went through, I'm able to, it's not that you're going to help everybody, but you'll always catch one or two lads who realise the relative experience, and you say, this is what this fella done, I'll give this a bash, I'll try this. And that for me is a huge thing in my turnaround, you know.
And Joey, can I just ask you, before all this, when you were caught with the drugs and you knew you were going to be facing a prison sentence, was this all new to you? Had you ever been in trouble before?
Never been to prison before. Never. Believe it or not, the day of my 40th birthday, I got committed to Clover Hill. And I still know, I'm 43 now, and I still turn around and say, it's the best thing that ever happened to me. It's the best birthday present I've ever got.
Really? And then you hear the horror stories of when people go to prison, sometimes, you know, they go worse on drugs or...
Yeah, we're out with that. Look, there's access to drugs in prison, 100%. And like I said earlier on, prison is not a nice place. There's nothing nice about prison. But I found myself in an environment where, like I said, I wanted to go down the route of residential treatment, but I was afraid to give up my job, I was afraid to do this, I was afraid to do that. Even though I wanted help, I was afraid to go and seek that proper help. Whereas now I was in an environment, now it was actually the decision was taken out of my hands, right, now you're in the situation. Here you go now. And it's a lot of people who have family and friends, and you see people who do interventions, and the person never really wants to, nobody wants to be an addict. Right. But there's a lot of people out there, I don't want to do drugs anymore. And deep down, but inside them, they can't wait to do the next drugs. And that's what an awful lot of people wear. I never had that. I hated it. It was around me and I just couldn't see a way over.
And if you hated it so much, Joey, why did you get involved in that scene? Why could you not have said, I'm taking myself out of this now and I'm not going to do it? When you went to prison, did you just kind of go cold turkey straight away?
I didn't have a choice, really. Like, there's a lot of drugs in prison. You can get drugs left, right and centre in prison, but cocaine would be one of the ones that you'd really get in prison, you know that way?
Really, yeah.
But, I put my mother through an awful time. I put my wife and kids in a horrible situation. You know, none of them knew what I was up to or what I was involved in. And everyone, the ripple effect and the knock-on effect from my actions and my decisions and my choices was huge. You know that way? And once you're in prison and you're in the little goldfish bowl, like the amount of people around the area and people gossiping and, oh, did you hear about Joey this? Did you hear about that? Yeah. I was isolated from all that. I didn't get all that, but my family weren't isolated from that. You know, my mother, like, for a long time felt shame walking down the road. She told me this now. Like, and the best way for me to repay all them, which was basically to do what I'd done, to make that step right. Look, okay, everyone makes mistakes in life. Everyone has, like, goes through patterns. Nobody's saying. But listen, I always put my hand up and I was always honest. Like, I'll admit to anyone what I'd done and how it happened and where it led me to. But I also, like, it's not about self-praise or it's not about looking for people, oh, yeah, fair play to him, he's doing right and all that. It's your own insight, the self-gratitude. Well, look, that's where I was before. This is where I am now. And I'll be honest with you, I said that the best thing that ever happened to me was to go to prison.
Yeah.
Grasped it with both hands. I thrived there. I didn't like prison at all, but I loved the experience of, right, I've been given a chance now, right? And this is the way I see it. A lot of people, like, they've given chance after chance after chance, and there'll only be so many chances you're given.
Yeah,
I've been given one chance, and I won't mess that up, you know, that way. Because I know exactly where I'm going back to, and I know where I was before, and it was a horrible, horrible place.
And Joey, do you think you did it for yourself, or did you do it for your family? As you said, you felt so ashamed. Your mother, your wife, your kids, they were all left outside of the prison. They all had to deal with what went on. So was that a big part in your life to do this for your family?
Honestly, look, I'm not going to say it didn't play a part, but honestly, it didn't. I knew what I was at the doing and I knew what the position I was at the leaving them in. But I needed to do this for me, because if I can't focus on me and if I can't get my own self straight, you can't be worrying about other people and their things. You have to look at yourself. And it comes to your own kids even. If you're not in a good place and you're not able to look at yourself, like, how can you be a good father? How can you say, all right, I'm looking after the kids and I'm doing this and I'm doing that, when you're in a state yourself? So now, like that, not in a selfish way, I needed to do this for me.
I needed to do that,
you know. And only by doing that then, only by, like, sorting myself out, well, then I was in a position at the right, okay, look, now we can have that knock-on effect to my family. The same way the drugs had a ripple effect of wrecking the family and putting everyone down, well, my actions now and the things that I do now and the stuff that I'm involved in now, they all take pride in that now. And they all love seeing that, and it has a positive effect on them as well.
Yeah,
in a lot of ways, you know.
And when you were going through this, were you still, like, keeping a job down and going through your everyday life? Were you still working every day?
Through me, cocaine addiction. Yeah, I was. Mm-hmm. I was driving a truck at the time and all that. And I don't know how I was able to function. There's a lot of things I'd love to say, but I sort of can't stop. But I look back and I cringe at some of my behaviour and some of the stuff I was doing. And I'm going red in the face now thinking about some of the stuff. I get embarrassed about the way I was carrying on. But when you're wrapped up in that addiction, you think you're grand. You think you're all right.
Yeah.
Nobody notices. I'll be all right. I'll be this and I'll be that. But it's thinking about the things that I used to do in my addiction. They'd be one of the strongest things now from keeping me away from drugs and keeping me away from drink and living the life I live. Because, like, looking back, man, I was a gobshite, and that's, to be honest with you, you know?
Yeah. And if there's anyone listening out there today, which there will be, and they're kind of going down that road you went down, what word of kind of warning can you give them? Like, it has to stop. It's not going to end good. What word of warning?
You have to, like a lot of addicts, recovering addicts, and anyone else will tell you, right? I've worried a long time for myself about family members and stuff like that as well that are going down the route that I've been down. And I need to be doing my best to try and... The addict themselves has to want to change. If they don't want to change, you can't... Like, all you can do is, right, listen, well, I'm going to be here for you. I'll support you when you want to change, right? You have to want to change, right? But the flip side of that as well, you can't do it on your own. When you want to change and you need that change, right, there's always people out there willing to help and support. There's always someone, like, you mightn't find the right person, of course. Like I says, I tried the whole 12 steps program. It wasn't working for me. I tried group therapy sessions. It wasn't working for me. I was going to these group sessions with a load of lads, all nice lads and all, and we were all talking about our cocaine addictions. And I was getting butterflies and going home and taking cocaine. And even though I didn't like cocaine and I didn't want to do it, because I was keeping it relevant and talking about it all the time, it was keeping it in my life. When I got to prison, a big thing for me was I stopped thinking about cocaine. But like, I read that book, The Secret. Everyone talks about The Secret, powerful book and all that. Now, yes, like a lot of people, unless you really strongly practice. Now, I'm sure, look, there's a lot of people who have changed their lives with that. But the one big thing that stuck out for me, I never mentioned cocaine in that book once, but the one big thing that really stuck out for me is that I was telling myself all the time, I hate cocaine, I don't like cocaine, I despise cocaine, I don't want to do cocaine. But all along, the mind is not understanding, I hate, I don't want, I despise this. All the mind was hearing was cocaine, cocaine, cocaine. I was keeping it relevant. So what I done was I started focusing on other things. I stopped thinking about cocaine. I started putting me energy into other stuff and all that. And it's only then when I stopped really thinking about cocaine and my addiction and that, and I started focusing, it just went away. And that, like, a lot of addicts will tell it, recovering addicts will tell it, every day is a battle. Every day is a struggle. I'm very, very lucky in a way that I don't find every day is a struggle. I don't find every day is a battle. I love where I am now at the moment. Like, let's be honest, I could go out and get an ounce of cocaine today if I wanted. I don't want it anymore because I know where I was and I know where it leads me to. I've never been tempted. It's not for me anymore. I've been there, I've done that, and my focus is on now. Like, keep myself healthy, keep myself fit. I do a lot of work, fundraising work, I do a lot of charity work, and that's where I get a lot of self-gratitude out of that. I get a lot of, I've always been a good person. Even through my addiction, I've always been a good person. I'd always help people, I'd always do others, not right. But I was just so wrapped up in my addiction. Whereas now, when you go out and do something good for someone, you feel that, like, you're not only helping them, you're helping yourself. And that self-gratitude is a powerful, powerful thing. Being just the little things in life now, like I said, when you're taken out of society and everything's taken out of your control, you're told, like, when to go to bed, when to get out of bed, when to eat, where to move, where not to move. You have no control over your environment or your situation. It's then you say, oh, Jesus, you know what, the little things, I'd love to be able to go on a walk now. I'd love to be able to go up to Glendalough. And them little things, and they're the things now that I do now. Like, I went into Cloverhill, 18 and a half stone, a chronic cocaine addict. Right, I'm 14 and a half stone now. I couldn't run from me front door, from me sitting around to the front door to answer the doorbell. I couldn't. I'm out now. I done the Dublin Marathon there a couple of weeks ago. It was a goal that I set myself when I was in prison. I said, right, if I'm going to turn my life around now, what I want to do is I need to set myself a goal and set myself a target and achieve that. So I said to myself, right, well, I'm going to pick up the running in prison on the treadmill. Let's go to the gym, pick up the running, because I could never run. I kept telling myself all the time, you can't run, you can't run, you can't run. But that whole thing again, you keep telling yourself you can't do something, you won't do it.
Yeah,
so I said to myself, I can do it. Like, of course I can do it. Stop doubting yourself. So I took up the treadmill in there, and then after I got out of prison, then, like, I started taking up running. And the goal all along was, right, if I can do a Dublin marathon, there's nothing I can't do. And I done that Dublin marathon last weekend. For me, that's... I won't stop here. I won't stop here. Well, but
no, that's great, Joey.
The fact that I've done that.
Yeah, no, yeah. It's great you turned your life around. It's absolutely brilliant. And I love hearing these stories. I mean, as I said, we've spoke to a few different people over the weeks. And it's great for people who are listening today going down that. I mean, you hate to see a loved one spiralling out of control. It can be one of the most horrific experiences of your life to see a loved one. And there's nothing you can do. As you said, Joey, you have to do it for yourself. But it's great where you are today. You've turned your life around. You've done prison, which was probably horrific in a lot of ways, but it helped you, and now you're out, you're working, you're as you said, you're getting your life back on track. And you know, fair play to you. I know it probably, you're making it sound like it was kind of easy enough for you, but I'm sure that was quite hard as well.
Yeah, no, thanks very much. But like, no, listen, it's not easy, but you have to ask yourself, what do you want? Like I says, the big thing, a huge thing is that, like, everyone, we're all afraid to say no. One of the best tricks I learned is to say no, and I don't mean say no to drugs. I mean in everyday life. Like, I have, like, 24s coming up, Christmas coming up, weddings coming up. No, sorry, I can't go to that. Do you know what I mean? And there's no, like, you're not missed. Do you know that way? Like, a big thing for me was, like, when I was sitting in my cell every Saturday night, I knew, right, I had family, I had friends, right, who were sitting in the same spot, in the same kitchen, every week, in the same situation, talking the same crap they're talking week after week, doing the same drugs. And I sat there saying to myself, do you know what? What am I missing?
Yeah.
I'm not missing anything. You know, and little things like that. Oh, look, at nobody wants to be an addict. There's not a person on the face of the earth wants to be an addict. Mm. You know, but the habits that we pick up, as a kid, you don't think as a kid growing up, I want to be a drug addict.
Yeah.
By the way, these are all habits that you pick up and stuff you learn along the way. But any habits that you learn and any habits that you can pick up can be changed. you have to want it. And if you do want it, there's services out there, there's people out there that will help you. And if you get to the first stage of help and it's not working for you, that's not the end of it. Like, okay, well, find something that works for you.
Yeah,
find something
maybe
that works for
things,
you.
Maybe a few things to try before it'll work for you. And Joey, do you think it's, when all this started for you, was it the company you were with? Was it the people you were hanging around with that got you kind of interested in doing this? Or was it yourself, do you think?
You can blame this person, you can blame that person, you can blame your environment, right? But at the end of the day, you always have a choice.
Mm.
Now, when I was wrapped up in my cocaine addiction, I felt like I have no choice. I haven't got a choice. This is what it is. I couldn't see a way out of this life. I couldn't see a way out. And I says, look, this is what it is. I don't have a choice. Sitting here now, looking back, I did have a choice. I just chose to keep going down that road. I chose to keep doing what I was doing. At every stage, even when I had, you never like just turn and say, oh, I done some cocaine last night. There's always a stage, there's always a process. You have to go and get that cocaine. You have to open that bag. You have to put some cocaine on that card. You have to stick it up your nose. There's loads of different stages where you have a choice, where you can break it down. And I realise that now. I learnt a lot of skills and a lot of tools that I can use now in life. And I try and tell other lads about the different stages of the process. Things don't just happen like that. There's always stages where you have a choice and you can stop and you can say, right, hang on for a minute. Start thinking of the consequences. If I do this cocaine now, how am I going to be tomorrow? I'm going to be dying sick. I'm going to be moody. I'm going to be snappy with my wife, my kids. I'm going to probably ring in sick and work tomorrow. When you start thinking of the consequences then and you break it down, you know, so you always have a choice. So, like, no, I'd never sit down and blame someone. It was the people I was with, it was the company I was with, it was this, it was that.
It was your
it was
own
my
choice.
Fault, yeah, my fault only, and that was it. I put my hand up to everything I've ever done.
And if you hadn't been caught with drugs and gone to prison, where do you think your life would have ended?
If I wasn't dead from a heart attack for the amount of cocaine that I was doing, I'd be still carrying on the way I was carrying on, you know, and that's been honest with you. So, going to prison is what worked for me. Going to prison is what helped me turn my life around, which is why I always tell people, there's addictions and then there's bad addictions. Another way, if you're really struggling with addiction, if you have a bad addiction, I'm a firm believer the only way to beat that addiction is residential treatment. You need to get taken out of society because you can't. You can go to these you can go to a drug counsellor, you can go to these group sessions, you can go to all this stuff and you can go there for an hour and you can do your work with them and you can come out feeling positive and you're going back to the same people, the same environment, all the same triggers, and you're going to trip up, you're going to slip, you know, and until residential treatment for me, there's not enough of them around. The ones that are there are absolutely brilliant. Some people come out and relapse straight away, but it's just proven facts that they work for an awful lot of people. You have to get taken out of society. You have to get taken out of that circle that you're in, the environment you're in, and that's where you break down then the barriers of like, right, well, you can start working on your triggers and start working on your stuff. A big, big trigger for me for a long time was I'm a mad boxing fan. I love me boxing. I've travelled the world to watch boxing fights I have, right? I used to love knowing that there was a boxing fight on every week. To be a fight on at 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning on Sky Sports or Boxing Nation, and I'd know on a Wednesday, right, such and such a fight tonight. And even though I didn't want to do cocaine, even though I hated it and I couldn't stand it, I was looking forward to the boxing fight. And the gas thing is, every weekend that I sat up for that boxing fight, I never got to watch the fight. I was sitting there now in my head talking shit. You know what I mean?
I know.
And that was a big, big trigger for me. Whereas now, like, what I do now is, like, if there's a fight I'm making a certain night, I'll record it, and I'll get up on Sunday morning and I'll watch it.
And
that's how we get to watch me boxing now. But it's little changes.
Yeah, and Joey, you mentioned the residential care, but don't you have to be clean to get help from these, to get into a residential care? So, I mean, how can people get clean when then, you know, I can't understand that.
I've never been in the residential care myself, but I only know from people who work in the in that industry and stuff like that, and talking to people in there. A lot of these places, you do have to be clean to get in. But it gives you that 2 or 3 week incentive. If you really want to get this treatment, if you want to get this care, well, you're going to have to make a sacrifice of 2 or 3 weeks.
Would you get help before that then? You'd get help from some organisation before you get
into this? Yeah, you'd definitely be linking in with a key worker beforehand. You'd be linking in somewhere. Some sort of day programme is the way to do it, right? But it's there for you. Like I said, it's the whole point of you going into treatment and getting the help is to beat your addiction, to get away from your addiction. Yet they're telling you have to be clean to come in to do this program.
Yeah.
And in a way, it sort of contradicts itself. But I can see the basis behind it. I can see why they do it. Because, listen, you need to show us, because there's so many people out there want this treatment. So many people want this bed. They want to get into this residential place. You prove to us that you want this enough. You've proved to us. You do this 2 or 3 weeks of clean urines. You do this, and we'll give you that bed. Because they don't want to take someone in, have them in there for 2 or 3 weeks, and they relapse in there. And you have to take in a spot away from someone else that really needs it.
Yeah.
So I can see why they do it.
Yeah, true. And so, Joey, you're back in work today. You're completely clean. You haven't relapsed or anything, and
no.
You've got your life back on track. And as I said, you're a lot happier in yourself now that you aren't on cocaine. Do you still attend support groups?
I don't, to be honest with you. I don't. What I do is I surround myself with an awful lot of like-minded people. I know an awful lot of people like recovering addicts like myself. Like I used to sort of, at the start, I used to have this thing like, I used to do cocaine. But realistically, I'm a recovering addict, and that's what I am. And I always will be a recovering addict. 20 years down the line, if I'm 20 years clean as all, but I'm still a recovering addict. And I've got comfortable with that now, you know. But what I do is I surround myself with a lot of like-minded people, of a lot of family and friends I have a few of them who don't even drink like myself, you know, that way. But a lot of them don't do cocaine, they don't like cocaine and stuff like that. So I try and surround myself with people like that. A big, big part as well is the running. The running has changed my life. The running has... I know every Sunday morning I go out on a long run. And that's my Sunday morning taken up. I'd be back from my long run and my wife and my daughter be only getting out of bed, do you get me?
Yeah.
But I'm not to get my run in. And that's my bit of me time every week I do that. Because I do a lot of work as well with the Bridges of Hope Homeless Outreach. There's a lot of people in there as well, like-minded people.
Yeah.
Colm's a great guy. Colm's been unreal support to me. Honestly, I look at him and what he's done with his life and where he's come.
Absolutely.
And that astounds me.
Yeah.
I'm blown away by him, how far he's come. And that's what I'm saying, is these success stories are out there. In another way, I wanted to be that success story. And here I am today.
And here
you
are today, Joey. And listen, thanks a million for sharing your story with us on Lifeline this morning. And congratulations. Keep up the good work. Keep up the running, because that gets the endorphins going. And they say even, you know, if you're feeling a bit down, you're feeling a bit weak, do a jog and it'll help your endorphins going. And
talking is huge.
Yeah, absolutely. And listen, Joey, thanks a million for sharing your story. And yeah, really interesting to listen. And if there's any young guys out there going down that wrong road, do you know what I mean? What words of advice could you give to them?
Don't give up. Don't give up. A very, very big thing is that there's a lot of self-doubt there, a lot of them, a lot of lack of confidence, a lot of beating us up. One of the greatest things I learned is to love myself. You have to love yourself, right? Mm. There is a way out. There is always a way out. If you want it, it's there for you. The change is in your hands.
Yeah.
You have the ability to change. Do you want it? If you do, it's there for you.
And it has to be done by you. Okay, thanks a million, Joey, for talking to us this morning.
No problem. Thanks very much, Evie.